might want to be here. Have you had a good afternoon?
Yes.
I know about 13 of us went walking. I did manage to keep it to only just over 3 miles, so I think I did myself proud there, really. But so that was nice. What did everyone else do? Did the Mahjong happen, Rosie? Did? Who won? Who won?
Not me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know how to play it, so, you know, doesn't really matter to me. Any sports people? That was the young people, wasn't it? Football, I think, stuff. Anything else? Anyone do anything else exciting? Okay, how was that? Yeah, do you get any photos? Was that where you went, Mike?
Yeah,
kingfishers?
Yeah, we didn't.
Did you catch it, though? Didn't catch it. I know, it's hopeless, isn't it? Yeah.
We saw a rat as well. As
you do, yeah. Pardon?
And a shoveler.
Okay, if you say so. I didn't think they worked on Saturdays, but yeah. Anyone else walk into Hoddesdon?
Yeah,
Ros. Yeah. Was it just you, Ros?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We cleared the charity shop.
Hoddesdon's quite quaint, isn't it, the town centre bit? Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I'm glad that you got a chance for some R&R. So this afternoon, for this session, we're going to think about serving to bless. We will be hearing about from a couple more of our folk, from Andrew and from Margaret, about how they serve in their particular spheres. But some general stuff first of all. So please don't switch off at this point, but I am about to mention the Camino. Wrapped in music. It has now been over 3 years since I got back, you realise. So it's been a while, and I still think it was one of the best things I have ever done. And there were many examples of people serving to bless pilgrims like me. So, one day, I walked about 22 miles to reach a unique little 13th century chapel, which we can see here. And as you can possibly see, it is literally right beside the Camino route. That road running alongside at the top is the Camino, and the archway you can see is the way into that 13th century chapel. And I had not planned to walk this far that day, to be honest, but I was reading through my guidebook and I spotted details of this unique little sort of hostel, more than that actually, but it had 12 beds for pilgrims, and I decided that I wanted one of them. So I walked further and I walked faster than others in an attempt, because you couldn't book ahead. And I got there in time, just. I was number 11. I felt a little bit guilty having possibly overtaken one or two others that were on their way there. At the last minute, rugby tackling them to the floor in my haste to get into the queue. But anyway, as it turned out, they didn't stop at 12. It was just that only 12 of us got beds. And there were about half a dozen more that were permitted to come in and ultimately sleep on the floor on sort of palliass mattresses. And this chapel, Ermita San Nicolas, it was called, was staffed by a band of about 5 volunteers from Italy who would come for a few weeks at a time. The beds were at one end of the chapel, and you can see that was where I slept on one of the upper bunks there. Up the stairs, there were about 4 more beds, I think, on a mezzanine floor at the end of the chapel. And there was a long table down the middle of the chapel, and at the other end, a simple altar. The chapel had no electricity and was lit by candles. It was very quaint. The volunteers were cooking a simple evening meal for us on a gas stove at the side. But before eating, they invited us to the altar. And there we prayed. And having taken off their outer garment, we have moved on there, and put on a rather bizarre tabard, which you can see there bearing scallop shells either side, which is the symbol of the Camino, they offered us the opportunity to have our feet washed. It was a symbolic act. Only one foot was washed for each of us. Perhaps that was so gross that they really didn't want to do the other one. But I had showered before that. There was, away from the part where there was no electricity, there was a sort of toilet block with water heated by solar power, and I was early enough to get hot water for that as well, so that was always good. So they would wash one foot for each of us, and then the next person would come round and dry said foot with a towel. And then they served us food and wine. Someone played a guitar, led a few songs in Italian. I don't know what they meant, but I sung along anyway. Before we all went to bed exhausted at the end of a long day, but feeling blessed. Now, of course, these Italian volunteers were following the example of Jesus himself, who washed the feet of his disciples. And John 13 tells the story. And this was almost certainly the same occasion that Jesus shared a Last Supper with the disciples. This is John's Gospel's version, really, of the Last Supper. And the disciples arrive for a meal, and somehow someone in the planning department had failed in their duty. There is no one designated to wash feet. Imagine a time before pedicures, foot spas, baths, and showers. Imagine a time when you had to bite your toenails to trim them. Have you tried that? Come on, I bet someone here's tried, haven't they? Come on, do you want to confess to that? Be a bit of a contortionist. You had that look, Mike. But they had to, or if not bite them, then pick them to trim them, because there were no scissors or nail clippers or emery boards. Imagine 13 pairs of hot, sweaty feet at the end of a long day. And you'll understand why it was the custom to wash feet before such a meal. Clearly, though, no one wanted to do it. It was normally the job of a household slave or servant. It was beneath the disciples, or so they thought. It was not done until Jesus set aside his rightful crown for a towel, or what we might refer to perhaps as an apron. If you know the story, you'll recall that there's a little bit of resistance from Peter. He who would not wash the feet of others did not think that Jesus should wash his feet. That objection was overcome. And this is what Jesus said, having washed their feet. Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Jesus set aside his crown for an apron, and soon the crown would be set aside on the cross. I think our challenge as we come to this story is, will we set aside our crowns of status and of self for aprons of service and love? This is what Jesus is saying we must do, I believe. In Philippians chapter 2, Paul tells us not to look to our own interests, but to the interests of others. He says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing, by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. How, I wonder, do we look to the interests of others? How are we to serve? It's not just here, I don't think, about serving in our church, important though that is, but also about serving in the world. So I've asked both Andrew and Margaret to share a bit about how things that they do is an expression of serving. Andrew's going to talk about that, I think, in relation to your work, and you can come and do that now if you like, Andrew, and then Margaret in a moment as town councillor and mayor, maybe amongst other things, because I know there's been a fair trade element as well to what you've done over the years. So thank you very much for being willing.
So, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago when Tim suggested or that I might say something about how I might serve to bless within the workplace, I wasn't sure what I'd be able to say, but I knew thinking about it would be a really good challenge and thought process for me, because I'm imagining, like many of us, we do serve to bless, whether it's in the workplace or wherever, but it's trying to think about it, and it's a useful process for ourselves even before we share that with one another. So I knew it wouldn't be easy, but here goes. So for the last 4.5 years I've worked for an international development charity called Practical Action. I've worked for other charities before that. It's not a Christian organisation, although it has many Christian influences, and as an organisation, as a charity, it does in itself seek to bless others. So I think I'm privileged in that sense. It seeks to bless others by sort of 4 areas of objectives: farming that works, and I've seen innovative sort of farming solutions in irrigation in Zimbabwe and Sudan. It seeks to bless others through energy that transforms, and one of its strengths as an organisation is solar pumps and clean cook stoves. And I've seen work like that, solar lighting in Rwanda or solar pumps in northern Kenya, where it's in Turkana region, where it's really dry land. It seeks to serve through cities fit for people, and maybe it's not that glamorous, but fecal sludge treatment works. I've seen in Indian towns where they don't have sewage or effluents like we do over here, and also in Bangladesh in Cox's Bazar. And then fourthly, it seeks to bless through resilience that protects. I've seen sort of early flood warning systems in Nepal, and also more sort of earthquake and other early warning systems in Peru. Next weekend I'm off to Peru and Bolivia for the second time, so please think of me there. So Practical Action overall, its mission statement, I was just listening to Tim earlier today and yesterday, it overlaps with many of the things that we've been thinking about. It's sort of early strapline: small is beautiful, and big change starts small. So I'm privileged to be part of an organisation that wants to bless others. But then the question or the challenge is, well, what does it mean to be a Christian in that context? To stand out, how does my witness stand out amongst many other good and kind people, some of whom are Christians, but not that many. So I've said who I work for. My role is audit. I am an internal auditor, and audit or auditor actually means listener. So really I should have been speaking in an earlier session, listening to bless. And as an auditor, the role then, in a sense, is checking that others follow rules. They follow procedures, they obey the contractual rules when we have with donors, they follow legislation. So I'm sure as I go about my business, as I walk around the office, as I contact other country offices, I'm sure I can hear them saying, not very loudly, but here comes the auditor to bless us. But carrying on with that, part of my work, I mean, is checking finances, but it's also checking other areas like HR and IT, security. But sticking with the finance bit, checking with the finance does make my work have a really strong biblical foundation. Because if you look up Matthew 7, verse 15, watch out for false prophets. And Zacchaeus himself made false prophets and then was blessed by God's true prophet. I know my understanding on this is correct, because even last night we sang a chorus together, "We Are Blessed," and we all sang the line, "Bring justice to profit." So going back to where I started, I don't think much of the way that I go about my work is any different compared to what many, if not most of us, would be able to share. But the role of internal audit is privileged because it does closely align with many biblical principles in ensuring stewardship, accountability, integrity, and I think the list could go on. We are accountable as an organisation to donors and beneficiaries, but then as individuals and as a church, we are accountable to God. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not human masters. So some sort of brief examples or anecdotes, and this is where I start to struggle. Firstly, I try and make it known that I'm a Christian and that I'm an active member of a church, but I don't think I'm very good at that. I do find it easier perhaps overseas when I'm talking with people of other cultures and other faiths to be able to do that. And I know I've had some, you know, really good conversations with, well, previous organisation with a Buddhist in Cambodia, with Hindus in Nepal. And one of the best was working with a Muslim guy from Kenya, but in Zimbabwe. He was really strong in his faith. And over the meal tables, we were able to sort of just understand and get to know each other as friends. I don't think either of us were ever going to convert the other, but it was really good to have those conversations. And I felt on part of our travels, he invited me into a mosque, so I was able to observe that at the back. And I just felt sort of quite privileged to be invited into that situation. So, I mean, from time to time, you know, conversations in the workplace in the UK in rugby. But, you know, I wish I could have more to share with you on that. But it's just there in the background. I do my best to treat everyone with fairness, courtesy and respect. And something that encouraged me fairly recently, I was talking to a friend in the finance department, telling her that on my travels, when I go and visit a country office, quite often I'll travel with what I call a guest auditor. So I'll take somebody from another department or another country, and they will support me in my work. Sometimes it's people that I haven't met before. Sometimes it's people that I feel that I'll get along well with. Sometimes, you know, all different shapes, sizes, ages, etc., etc. And my reflection to this colleague is, even if I've been apprehensive about that, every time I've come away and it's been an enriching experience, and I've got on well with that person and they with me. And I think that's a genuine reflection. And her reflection to me was, well, Andrew, you know what the common factor in that was. And she was effectively saying, it's you, Andrew. You know, you're treating people with fairness, courtesy and respect. So I was quite encouraged by that, and that somebody had observed that. I do my best to help people. I think sometimes there's a perception that auditors are there to criticise and to get in the way of people doing their job. But when I start a piece of work, when I go to a country, I will say, you know, one of the main things is to work alongside you to find ways that you can do your job more efficiently or effectively. So it's really pleasing when perhaps occasionally people will write and say, oh, can you help me with this problem? Or when we make identify problems, we'll make recommendations to try and be, well, to be helpful. And it's not instructing them, it is working alongside them. And one of the pieces of work that I've, a bigger piece that I've done, is developing risk register for all country offices and for the organisation as a whole. So it really is, it's been recognised by across the organisation by the directors and the trustees as being something that's really, really helpful to try and improve the smooth working of the organisation. And then fourthly, something that's been more uppermost in my mind recently is I always do my best to act fairly and consistently. Again, you know, linking that to the role of an auditor, where you're giving opinions, and it can be quite difficult because it can sometimes seem that you're criticising somebody. So I was auditing a country programme, and when it got to sort of issuing the report, we give an overall opinion level, we explain it more. But in 25 years of internal auditing, it was been one of the most, they pushed back, disagreed with us, we listened, we changed bits, and still ended up with a level of disagreement, but still issued the report. And I did the best to try and explain it, to smooth the communication just with this country director, but also other, you know, trustees around them and more senior managers, so that it would be that I would be acting fairly and with integrity. So that I found a really difficult process, because I don't want to sort of upset people, but I think that's what I did in that situation. And at the same time, I was doing another piece of work where I was having to do an investigation of a sort of senior manager who had been accused of misconduct in different ways. And the outcome was dealt with, you know, the person has been retained, there was a sense of balance, we retained good relations with that person, and that manager, who knows that I did the investigation, has sort of wrote to me and said, you know, thank you for dealing with that professionally and fairly. So two really difficult, for me, really difficult situations. And what's been encouraging is that the chief executive, who I report to, and the audit committee and a few others have recognised, acknowledged and thanked me for my professionalism, fairness and robustness in dealing with those cases. And now because of that, they're sort of trusting me with other and perhaps even more difficult situation. There's one coming up which I'll have to deal with when I get back from Peru and Bolivia. But in conversation with the chief executive, I mean, hopefully linked to or explained in the context that she knew as a Christian, I was able to say to her, well, it feels like being part of the conscience of the organisation. And hopefully that's something all of us in employment can relate to. So, yeah, helping people, dealing with people with courtesy and respect, whether they're senior managers, whether they're volunteers, whoever, acting fairly and consistently, making it known as best we can something of our faith. But finally, I want to share an anecdote, and it relates to my own, I think it is my only previous time to this conference centre, to High Lee. Over 20 years ago, with Lorna, I came to an annual conference of the International Nepal Fellowship, which is a Christian medical mission. Nepal is on our hearts. It's a place that Lorna and I met. As a medical mission, you know, Lorna's as a nurse, as I think all of you know. And we were tentatively exploring the possibility that, you know, whether we should get involved. It seemed to make sense with Lorna as a nurse. And what was interesting is that, sure enough, they did announce that they were looking to recruit people. They were looking to recruit an auditor.
Right, thank you very much, Andrew. That's excellent, thank you. And lots, it's on record, was it? Yeah, excellent, good, because I'd like to listen again, so that was really good. And, whatever we do, I don't think Christians have the monopoly on serving, do they? Often people, you know, who don't have any particular faith show us the way. But maybe we have that added ingredient of the love of God with which we can serve and bless people, whatever we do. You know, it's not just the things that typically we talk about, people being called by God to maybe serve overseas with INF or whoever. But maybe, even if we wouldn't describe it as being called in our particular places of work, we can see that as a form of service through, as Andrew's sort of shared there, the way that we go about what we do and serve with integrity and honesty and all of the rest of it. Right, Margaret, would you like to come and share with us? I'm sure we will learn lots from you as well and be interested in hearing a perspective on slightly different things. Thank you.
Just a few thoughts from me, really, about how I ended up being mayor, my journey to becoming mayor. And Tim mentioned fair trade, and it was very much because I was part of the fair trade town movement back from the early 2000s, really, and because of my passion for fair trade and justice. And that involved me working alongside Buckingham Town Council at events, and also we needed the support of the town council in order to become a fair trade town. So that's how I sort of became in the orbit of the town council. And then, I don't know whether many of you know Ruth Newell, but she was part of our fair trade town steering group as well. And she said to me one day, there's a casual vacancy in the ward where you live, because the councillor had had to resign. And she said, I'd like you to think about doing it. And I think Tim preached a sermon at a very similar time about doing things on locally, or even mentioned the town council. And it just seemed to fit. And so I was co-opted onto the town council about coming up to 7 years ago, I think. And it wasn't something I'd particularly anticipated doing, although I suppose all of my adult life I've been quite interested in politics with a small p, not party politics, and democracy. I've got a passion for democracy and justice. So I ended up on Buckingham Town Council. And then after the elections in 2021...
You can stand a bit further away, I think.
2021, I was asked if I'd considered it being mayor, and that all happened very quickly because you couldn't do anything until after the elections because you didn't know who was going to be on the council. So we had an interesting few days, didn't we? And on the day when they were deciding, I had all these phone calls, and it just felt that this was what I should be doing at that point in my life. And I'm slightly surprised nobody's mentioned salt and light yet, but that's something I've felt very strongly, that we as Christians need to be salt and light in the community where we live. And I feel my being on the town council and now being mayor is part of that. And I feel quite strongly that it's where God wants me to serve at the moment. And that has meant that I've not been as available even to attend church as often as I would normally have done, but certainly not to be as involved in the background or doing roles within the church. And also some of the other things I was doing before, I've not been able to give priority to, because I've only got so much energy, and particularly if it involves thinking about things as well, you've got to cut yourself some slack and not try and do too many things. And being mayor has definitely been my priority this last year or so. And it's a real privilege and honour to serve as mayor in our town. And it's brought me to some interesting meetings and places. You get invited to lots of interesting events. I was sharing with Karen earlier about going to a scouting event a week ago today, and you know, it's really fascinating hearing what's going on in other places, other parts of our community. So I don't know how much you know about Buckingham Town Council, but there are 17 councillors, and it's your fellow councillors who ask you to be mayor and elect you as mayor. It's not the people as a whole. And so they asked me to do a second year, which was, you know, you wonder whether they will. And as mayor, you become part of the chain gang of other mayors around in the locality. And you get to know other mayors as well. And that's been interesting and exciting, and I say a privilege to go to these sorts of events. And when thinking about what I would say now, a couple of things came back to me. I was quite involved in the United Reformed Church for quite a few years, and one of the things that was quite prominent in the URC at one point and came to the fore at that time was this strapline, God's people transformed by the gospel, making a difference. And I hope that's what I'm able to do on the town council as mayor. And, you know, Andrew talked about the auditors, obviously fairly regulated, isn't it? And town council is regulated by standing orders and code of conduct. And I have to administer those standing orders as mayor and have a gavel. I don't have much power. The town council has very little power. And the mayor has no additional power, really, except for that they talk about soft power. So, you know, you can maybe influence things a little bit. But in the code of conduct, we had some training recently, and one of the things I noted down, because I'm a compulsive note taker, was disagree with grace. Because as town council, if those 17 people all thought the same thing about every issue, then we've got the wrong group of councillors, because you're never going to, even within our church, we're not all going to have the same ideas. So definitely in the town council, you need to have a variety of ideas. You can't always agree, but the aim, and I thought is really important, is to disagree with grace. And it was interesting. It was grace that was used in a secular training about code of conduct. And so my aim is to enable the councillors to disagree with grace when they have to disagree. So that's about it, really. thank you. And thank you to Tim's support as my chaplain as well.
Well, let's just give thank you to Margaret and to Andrew for their contributions. So. Again, two very different perspectives, isn't it, on service, but also very interesting. And I was just sort of reflecting as you were speaking, Margaret. I think actually, probably 7 years ago, I was just sort of dreaming dreams, and I put down, I think it was 25 dreams for Well Street, one of which was that we would have someone on the town council. Don't ask me to remember what the other dreams are. Some of them have happened and some haven't. It might have been the inevitable new building. That one hasn't happened, but others have been there. And so I think it's been great that you've stepped up and become a town councillor. Of course, you don't kind of become a town councillor, you know, wanting probably or expecting to become mayor. But it has happened, and you know, I'm sure that's testimony to you, and I think you're serving well. And we've reflected on sort of serving in the workplace as well. I just think it'd be good to stop for a moment. Again, it's useful to talk to one another in what you do. Not all of us are still working, but we are maybe doing other things, things that we can do. Does what you are doing express your Christian faith? Can we put it that way? How is it a way that you can serve? Perhaps you haven't thought of it in that way, but maybe you can. you know, just doing something to the best of our ability can be an expression of our Christian faith, can't it? Even if we don't know if it makes any obvious difference to anyone else. So how are you finding opportunities to express your Christian faith by what you do? So turn to those around you, whoever you want to turn to.